I'm pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Jordan van der Lam. Welcome, Jordan.
Thanks for having me, Michael. Appreciate it. Again, sorry.
yes, we should tell our listeners we've been doing our best to just to start and proceed and stop and start again. But it's a beautiful day in Fremantle, Jordan. You've come all the way from Melbourne, I think, to take up the delightful Fremantle weather at the moment.
Yeah, certainly. Leaving tomorrow, but I'm looking forward to it.
But the main reason you are here, apart from the good weather today, is to attend the launch of WA Socialist Group. Is that
That's
right?
correct. Yeah, absolutely.
There seems to be a rise of socialism in the world at the moment, Jordan. Am I right, or is it just coincidence that there's a story about a socialist every other day of the week at the moment?
Yeah, I think there's definitely something happening. It's hard to quantify. Yeah, I don't want to put too much like allusion into it, but like, there's definitely something happening. We're having, in New York City, a self-confessed socialist winning a Democratic primary, with all of the critique that should come from a socialist within the Democrats. I don't know, something's happening. Like, we've just had a communist elected in the primary, for the center left party again, in Chile, having Corbyn and Sultana doing whatever they're doing at the moment. We had, record votes for Victorian socialists at this election. I don't know, like, something is in the air. We're having rank and file union groups starting to organize and take over their unions from the, bureaucracy that has been there for 32 years. There's something in the air. Like, people are coming to socialist meetings on a weeknight in the outer suburbs of Melbourne. Like, things are happening.
Well, people from Fremantle won't be fazed by any of this. Back in the day, back in my day, a little bit older than you, Jordan, Fremantle had its communist candidates at most elections, state and federal. The unions were strong. The left was have a lot of say around Fremantle, and there's still a whole lot of sort of bolshy attitudes in Fremantle, I think. What sort of reception are you thinking the WA Socialists are going to receive at the Buffalo Club on Friday night?
I think it'll be interesting. I think we've had a lot of members join already. But in WA, it's very different to, I guess, the rest of the states, because you've got, record budget surpluses every year, but the conditions for ordinary people keep getting worse and worse. And you have, a state that is run on behalf of multinational capital and property investors by the Labor Party, and they don't even have to pretend to be opposed to capital. So it's an interesting little situation, which I think gives us a little bit more room as well. There's less pretending to be left from Labor over there. So an actual left opposition can probably get a bit more breathing room, because there's probably less of a belief there. But I'm from Victoria, so I don't know.
You stood, in fact, for the Victorian Socialist Group for the Senate at the recent elections. How did you go?
Yeah, so we got, a record number of votes. At the last federal election, we ran in 10 lower house seats. At this federal election, we ran in four, and we tripled our upper house vote, which is not something to sniff at. Usually, parties get, their upper house vote is proportional to how many seats they run in the lower house. So to triple our vote while running in less seats, is like, that's it. It's indicative of something. I don't know what that is, but it's certainly indicative of something.
And broadly speaking, because perhaps it can only be put in broad terms, what do the socialists of Australia, if we can amalgamate them for a moment, stand for?
A society that's run for people and not for profit, and run by ordinary people for ordinary people rather than the rich for the rich. We want We want people to be able to access housing and healthcare and education and not have those things turned into commodities for people's profit rather than our human needs. Like it's like the asks aren't particularly ridiculous. Like yeah, it's just like the state of this society is just ridiculous, and we want a better one.
And are you finding around the country that the socialist groups, new or older, are attracting a certain demographic, a certain sort of maybe disaffected person, or who exactly?
So particularly in Melbourne, where we've been around a lot, we were attracting more and more younger people, which was really interesting. But then when I went to South Australia and to Queensland, we were getting, veteran socialist organizers, come along to the meetings and stuff like that. So like the swath of people that are coming into the orbit of socialism includes people who have already been there for a very long time and now have something to connect with and join and build and stuff like that. But yeah, we're also getting heaps of just new radicalized people that are just pissed off and perhaps last year even wouldn't have necessarily called themselves a socialist. So yeah, it's hard to like, yeah, it's there's a lot of young people though. That's definitely happened.
When I was a young university student and learning a little bit about politics and the way the world worked, it was in the late 60s, and so people identified, if they're on the socialist side of things or the communist side of things, as Marxist-Leninists or Marxist-Trotskyists and various groups in between. Have those sort of epithets or labels sort of died a death in the ensuing years, Jordan?
It's hard to say. Like, there's certainly some people that hold, like, Stalinist policies, or like positions on things, but they're not as many people as I expected. So like obviously we're from more of a Trotskyist tradition, and we are just the largest kind of group at the moment. We're the ones building the party, building the politics, spreading the word and stuff like that. So yeah, I think there's less and less of a distinction in amongst people who would call themselves socialists now holding views like it's okay, imperialism is okay as long as you call yourself anti-imperialist or something like that. I think that's starting to die out. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, you become something of a social media star, if you like, a practicing socialist in the area of housing, of accommodation, of people not being able to get proper rentals and wondering about how we're going to deal with the housing affordability and availability crisis in Australia. You even set up a database a couple of years ago with the very catchy name, Jordan, Shit Rentals. So tell us how you got into this space. And I get the impression from the smile on your face that you've rather enjoyed yourself.
Yeah, it's been quite fun. Yeah, I like I when I started, I had a bit of a plan. So like, I was a socialist at the start, not a particularly good one or one who'd read a lot of theory. But I knew that we should be fighting for a better world, and one that was run by ordinary people rather than the rich. But I also knew that that would require, at the very minimum, some level of organization and, collective action. So what I did was start just by talking and making fun of the housing situation in this country. And then, slowly progressed into, oh, there's actually something that we can do about this. And, let's start talking about, like, it's other people, let's start talking about the situation that we're in and stuff like that. But then also with the establishment of the Shit Rentals website, I wanted people to be able to, tell their own stories collectively and use it as a warning, for other people. And then I kind of introduce the idea that, hey, this is kind of a form of collective action that you're doing. And also, have you considered socialism? And that's where we've kind of landed now, I guess.
I clicked on one of the TikTok videos and immediately felt under attack, Jordan. I'm a baby boomer, and we seem responsible, apparently, for all of the ills of the world.
Definitely not the working class. There's certainly some, ruling class baby boomers who are responsible for a lot of things. But yeah, no, the baby boomers themselves, the broad majority of them are not responsible for any of this. Unless, they're the ones participating in the exploitation of us.
Well, it is interesting, and there's a lot of media around now. I saw just a mainstream piece the other day where a journalist, I think, who quizzed all the members of the parliament to find out, maybe just the Labor Party, to find out how many houses they each owned, and it was quite instructive. Some said they didn't have any, some had four, and there's this notion that we really need to have an inventory of housing in Australia. We need to see what we've got. Is there stuff that's not being used? And more generally, in policy terms, how do we encourage people who do own property to be fair in the rental of it, so that people who don't have a place to live suddenly do get a place to live? You've thought a bit about this. What do you think are the best immediately pick-upable policies that a federal or a state government could pick up in Australia to ameliorate the situation that we now face?
Yeah, well, the thing is, we have litigated this question time and time again over, decades and decades, and the answer has always been the same, and it is public housing. Like, just build mass public housing that is built by the government, not private developers. Don't subsidize private developers. Not social housing, not affordable housing, where we're just subsidizing a private investor, or even, in community housing, where we're just subsidizing a church, or equivalent, or NGO. And the thing that pisses me off about it is not only that we've had, hundreds of Senate inquiries and parliamentary inquiries into this exact question and come up with the exact same answer, which is public housing. Public housing is the answer. The private market will not build, like, it will commodify housing, and that is the problem. But public housing will allow for people to live in something based on their need. And also, it will have a downward impact, a downward effect on the market, on market rents, which is, that's the problem, the market rents and the market price of housing. But I think the thing that pisses me off the most is that, like, even Menzies litigated this question and was like, yeah, the market will not provide houses based on human need. And like a Liberal Prime Minister being like, okay, public housing, I guess we can have some of that. Meanwhile, now we've got the Labor Party holding a further right position than, the Liberals of old. Like, it's all just insane to me. Just build public housing.
It seems to be a great reliance on what you might call market techniques to get housing freed up for people. I mean, just take something like all the Airbnbs that exist in the world. I don't know what the actual number is that they've created an issue around the world, particularly in European countries where tourists come and take up the Airbnbs, and the locals who need a place don't have anywhere to live. There's a scheme probably around the country, but just been reactivated here in Western Australia, whereby the government, the state government, will pay a landowner more money if they'll take their Airbnb off short-term rental and make it a long-term. I see you smiling. You're not convinced about that, Jordan.
Like, the idea that we're using, like, taxpayer money to incentivize people to do the right thing is ridiculous. We need to threaten these people, and if they don't respond, we need to expropriate their stuff. Like, that's how it, like, what in what world does incentivizing people to do the right thing, like, work, particularly when they can profit more if they don't do the right thing? Like, this is just stupid. Like, people, like, yeah, like, ban Airbnbs, ban short-term, short-stay accommodation, particularly, when there's a rental crisis. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, I know in Melbourne there are entire like areas where even doctors can't afford to live. They can't get doctors in their cities because of the amount of Airbnbs and, like, having seven rentals available, but over thousands and thousands of Airbnbs, particularly in the Mornington Peninsula. Like, this, it's just ridiculous. We don't need market solutions to a market failure.
The Mornington Peninsula, many in the West will even know it as a like a grand holiday ground. So I suppose there's all sorts of discretionary housing there that people use when it's summertime or when they get a holiday again, but otherwise sits a little dormant. Is that actually the sort of area that's likely to help people who don't have anywhere to live? I guess if they don't have a job, they're happy to go and live anywhere.
Yeah, well, like, yeah, at the end of the day, you need to survive. So if you can afford a roof over your head, you'll probably go there. Like, we see people move further and further out of the cities because it's cheaper. Mornington Peninsula isn't one of those destinations. Yeah, like, banning Airbnbs, particularly in places like the Mornington Peninsula, I think you would start to see, workers who work in the Mornington Peninsula start to be able to live there, and that'd be quite nice.
Are there other, what we might simply call policy solutions that the Jordan van der Lamme slash Victorian socialists believe could be brought in and have, if not a quick fix, a real effect?
Yeah, well, like, at the moment, like so obviously building public housing by the government, with a unionized construction industry, that are public servants and well paid, would resolve most of this problem that we're experiencing. Particularly if we build enough public housing that it is abundant and accessible and high quality enough for anyone who wants to live there to be able to live there, not just people who are suffering the most. That's kind of really important. But there's heaps of other stuff that we could do, like capping rents and rent freezes and stuff like that while we build those public houses. There's also, hundreds and thousands of empty homes across the country, like way more than three times as many empty homes than we have people experiencing homelessness. And, like, compulsory acquisition is constitutional. So one of the things that we're proposing is an audit of the empty homes every 2 years, for the government to buy them back and provide them to people on the public housing wait list in the meantime. We've got things like, I don't know, there's just so many policies, there's so many things that we could do, but we just know that they won't do them unless we force them to. So we want to force them to do it.
It is interesting. The Fremantle Shipping News tries to watch the whole question of homelessness for housing, affordable housing, the whole lot. I mean, the state government in recent years has taken what I think is a commendable approach, a little bit like what you've outlined, really. They're out in the market acquiring homes, ordinary homes that families can go into. They're not waiting to build or to buy a huge block of flats, and they're doing that as well. It is interesting to see the responses, but you come back to what really was the post-Second World War solution to this, right around the Western world, I think, in the UK, in Australia, to establish the State Housing Commission, Housing Trust, to build these and to manage these properties so that people had somewhere to live. And we've really lost control of that system, haven't we?
Yeah, definitely. And it all comes down to the Royal Commission. That's also, people refer to it as the Henderson Review, which gave us things like the Henderson Poverty Line, which is a good thing. But it also, one of the recommendations of that review was that there were too many people working and living in public housing. Obviously, very neoliberal perspective that, only society's most vulnerable should live in public housing. And then, so naturally, the government accepted that recommendation and not the one that people shouldn't live in poverty, and started selling public housing. And it's like, that's what's created this stigma behind public housing and the managed decline of public housing. And like, even like in Western Australia, it's particularly bad because the government evicts public housing tenants into homelessness, which is like, it's not only just cruel, but like, what is that? What are you doing? What if that's your, if that's the public housing agency doing that? Then what do you expect private landlords to be doing? Like, you're setting the example there. Of course, the private landlords are going to do worse than you're doing, but this is just a symptom of that managed decline after the Henderson Review.
One of the interesting, I don't know if it is interesting at the end of the day, developments in housing construction is the build to rent phenomenon. What do you make of that?
Stupid. Like, it's very stupid. Not the most stupid. Ironically, because the build to rent will give, the government will subsidize a private developer and a private investor to own one big development that is, but they're only able to rent it. So like, there's nothing stopping people doing that already, but the government's just decided we're going to subsidize it now. And it'll be one big corporate landlord, probably a super fund in Australia, that owns all of the homes in that block. And the price of those homes is set against the market, not based on your income. So we know it's going to fail. It's going to be too expensive because the market is too expensive. But it also will give tenants an opportunity to organize against a single landlord this time, rather than hundreds of different landlords. So that could be interesting, particularly if it is, a very over-leveraged landlord that owns a build-to-rent development, and that a rent strike occurs in that particular development. That could be really interesting. So yeah, we'll wait and see.
Jordan, we're getting towards the end of our discussion. You'll hear us, we said at the outset, to be at and speak at the launch of the WA Socialists Group. Can you give us a little bit of an insight to the things you're likely to be saying and encouraging the locals with?
Yeah, I'm going to be trying to dip into the anger that people are experiencing, because that is very motivating. I want to talk about how, the government just has record surpluses every year and things are getting worse for ordinary people, but really good for people like Gina Rinehart, and multinational corporations. And there is, we have a common enemy and we can organize against that enemy. Yeah, I'd like, there's just so much wrong all over this country, but some of the stuff in Western Australia is very, very particular. And I feel like if I was a Western Australian, I would be very, very angry, even more angry than I am as a Victorian. So yeah, I just want to encourage people to use that, to help build us a better world.
Jordan Vanderland, thank you very much for joining me today and telling us what you've told us. Good luck
Thanks so
with
much for having me.
that.
Thank you, mate. Appreciate it.